Well, I'm going to break into this wonderful plan of things and talk for a bit. I wanted to bring to you what I would consider to be the most complete story of the wise men that I've heard yet. I'm calling it a story of Persia, of Daniel, and the long journey of the Magi. The Magi is another word for the wise men. It's actually the Greek word that's translated wise men. We get our word magic and magicians from this because they were supposed to do magic. So from the courts of Babylon to the night sky over Bethlehem, with citations from search results. I want to begin with Daniel, the world Daniel entered in the 6th century B.C. He was taken into the Babylonian exile in 605 B.C., B.C. before Christ, 665 years before Christ. The world was ruled by the great Neo-Babylonian Empire, Nebuchadnezzar II, the king who rebuilt Babylon's splendor, placed Daniel among the elite scholars of the realm, the Hakim, the Old Testament word, the wise men. Archaeology confirms Nebuchadnezzar's historical presence and power through inscriptions such as the Nebuchadnezzar Stele, or Stela. It dates from Nebuchadnezzar's time and shows him with the great ziggurat. That's not a cigarette, that's a ziggurat. A ziggurat is like a pyramid. So I show you the photograph of the black stone, and next to it is a diagram showing you what the lines were carved into that. And so that's Nebuchadnezzar then standing with a staff. So Daniel became in favor with Nebuchadnezzar. You remember the relating of the dream and the interpretation. And so Daniel's role became very powerful. We know how powerful it was because 66 years after Nebuchadnezzar had promoted him, and I give you the verse there in Daniel 2:48, the chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. After the dream interpretation, he made him as chief of the governors over all the wise men. So, but 66 years after that, he was remembered as master of the magicians and so on. In Daniel 5:11, the queen mother says to Belshazzar, "There is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father," and this is referring back to grandfather of Nebuchadnezzar, "light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods was found in him, whom the king, Nebuchadnezzar thy father," the king I say, thy father, "made," Daniel, "master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers." Now, that wasn't a light thing. The wise men were the people who carried all the sacred wisdom, you see, of the nation, and a bunch of foolishness. They had dream handbooks. They had collected information. Somebody got run over by a chariot or something. It came running over. "What did you dream last night?" "A dog talked to me." Okay, if a dog talks to you, you get run over by a chariot. They would write these things down. So we have the record of these, several of these dream books. And so they were quite involved. Also, they were involved in finding out when would be the best time to do this. When would be the best time, the most auspicious time to do that. And so they were involved in all the things of this. And he was, in fact, the one that was on top of them all. The title of chief is historically significant. It effectively made Daniel chief of the Magi, a rule recognized by later Jewish and Christian interpreters. The second thing I want to bring out is the rise of Persia and the reformation of the Magi. So the Magi were there. They were part of Babylon. But when Persia took over, they kept them, but they changed them. They changed the point of it all. In fact, in Persia, the religion of Zoroaster, called Zoroastrianism, hard to say, but that was a religion, and so they all of their wisdom knowledge was cast under the idea of following Ahura Mazda and the religion of Zoroaster. So in 539 BC, Cyrus the Great conquered Babylon, founded the Achaemenid Persian Empire, the largest empire the world had yet seen. Cyrus and his successors, Cambyses, Darius I, Artaxerxes, ruled a multicultural empire stretching from the Indus Valley, that's modern-day Pakistan, northwest India, parts of northwest Afghanistan, to the Meridian, to the Mediterranean. So it was the entire civilized world. The Magi, originally a Median priestly tribe, were absorbed into the Persian imperial structure. They became royal advisors, dream interpreters, astronomer priests, and guardians of the sacred knowledge. Now, for a while, Daniel was still leading them. Their religious background was Zoroastrian, a faith deeply concerned with cosmic order, light versus darkness, celestial signs, all themes that God would later use to connect them with the Star of Bethlehem. The third thing we see is the Daniel's influence on the Magi tradition. Daniel's position in the Persian court meant that Jewish prophecy entered the intellectual bloodstream of the Magi. It would have had to have been that way. What he wrote, what he read, would have been the scrolls of the wise men, you see. Scholars note that Daniel's teachings, especially the prophecy of a coming king, likely became part of the Magi's inherited knowledge, passed on down long after Daniel, as they were keeping these scrolls for hundreds of years. Number four, archaeological and historical clues about the Magi. Some of the things that we've found, archaeology shows that the Magi, as a real historical class, they were hereditary priests. In other words, you didn't get voted in. It was part of the family. You were hereditary of the Medes and the Persians. They served in royal courts, including those of Cyrus, Darius, and even far removed and 540 years later under Nero. So here was a constant stream of this tradition of the Magi. They were experts in astronomy and astrology, which they did not see any difference. They were inseparable sciences in the ancient world. And they maintained sacred fires and interpreted celestial phenomena as divine messages. What do the stars say? Number five, Persia after Daniel. We see the kings and the empires. We in the Bible, we leave Babylon and we go back to Israel and we start that emphasis. I wanted to stay at Persia here for a while. So we see, of course, it was Cyrus the Great that conquered Babylon. After him was Cambyses, then Darius I, and Xerxes the First, Artaxerxes First, Second, and Third, and then Darius the Third. He was defeated by Alexander the Great. That began the Hellenistic, the Greek period. Alexander's conquest shattered Persian rule. After his death, after Alexander's death, his empire was divided among his generals. And Persia fell under one of the generals, the Seleucid Empire, a Greek-speaking dynasty. Now, during this time, the Magi were still active. They preserved their identity as a priestly caste, even under foreign rule. Then came the Parthian Empire. Parthian. By the 2nd century BC, we've come clear through to only two centuries before Christ. The Parthians, they were a fierce horse archers. That has to be kind of tricky, right? Riding, shooting. From northeastern Iran, overthrew the Seleucids and restored Persian power to people of that area. The Magi of Matthew 2 almost certainly came from the city of, and your guess is as good as mine, Ctesiphon, the dominant capital city of Parthia. So this is where they were stationed. This is where they did their studies. This is where they saw the star. It sat on the Tigris River directly across from Seleucia, forming a massive twin city complex that became one of the largest urban centers in the ancient world. So it was Parthian Magi that made such a powerful impact on Jerusalem. Now, it's not just that they were Magi, but they came from this capital city from Parthia, because Rome, Parthia was Rome's rival. At this time, Parthian nobles often traveled in large, impressive delegations, and the Magi were known to be influential in Parthian politics, involved even in the choosing of kings. So, Matthew 2:3, when Herod the king heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. They're here to choose a king. They're here to find a king. So when the Magi arrived in Jerusalem asking, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? It would have been politically explosive. A Parthian delegation seeking a rival king in Roman territory. Big deal. The world situation around 5 BC, as far as we can tell, long after Christ, they started going back and working out the dates. And so Ethiopian dates are different from the rest of the world, but 2025, we figure go back that Christ was probably not born at zero, but born at 5 BC. So the world around that time, at the time of Jesus' birth, Rome controlled Judah under Herod the Great. Parthia controlled Persia and Mesopotamia. The two empires were uneasy rivals with a history of border wars. A Parthian diplomatic mission entering Jerusalem would have caused immediate alarm. So this historical tension explains Herod's fear and troubled reaction of all Jerusalem with him. Now, why did the Magi come? And we have really stupid reasons given to us all along that they knew how to read the stars. Give me a break. You can see a star, and it shows you light, and it doesn't give you a message. There's no Morse code. There's nothing there. Nothing about it gives a message. And especially this star, which was not a normal star. It was a supernatural thing. So it's often assumed that the angels visited the shepherds the night of Jesus' birth. I misspelled Jesus. Sorry there. The night of Jesus' birth, because, why did he visit them? Because they were believers longing for the coming Messiah. We don't know that, but it's assumed. I believe God used the supernatural star to signal the birth of the Messiah to believing Magi. This is my theory, and I'm sticking with it. Why would Zoroastrian priests come to believe in the God of Israel? Why would they want to believe in him? Well, the Magi were keepers of mystic writings. Daniel, the chief of Magi, had many scrolls that he read and some that he wrote. We have them in the book of Daniel. These would have been important to treasure considering his recorded powers. If you think about a Magi looking at what he had, what he could do, what he studied, compared to Daniel. While the standard Magi had books to help them interpret dreams, Daniel was able to know what Nebuchadnezzar dreamed and its interpretation. A big difference. While Zoroastrian priests were familiar with fire because they burned sacrifices, were in charge of keeping ritual fires, Daniel's God saved three friends from being burned alive in an extremely hot fire. While the Magi were called kingmakers because they were consulted about succession of kings and advantageous times of crowning, Daniel's papers accurately predicted which kingdoms would fall and which would rise in power. And they were right. While they worked to achieve balance in the Zoroastrian god Ahura Mazda's universe, Nebuchadnezzar proclaimed of Daniel's God, "I blessed the Most High and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion, his kingdom, is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom is from generation to generation." And notice the power here, the utmost power, not divided by light and darkness here, like Ahura Mazda. "And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he, the God, doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou?" No, nobody chastises God. And then while the Magi maintained Zoroastrian sacred texts, Daniel's God miraculously saved him from horrible destruction in the lion's den. I mean, just no comparison to what they had to what he had. And then the Magi's predictions were commonly understood to be a general and a vague foreshadowing that were usually inaccurate. Daniel wrote a prediction given him by a holy angel that set the chronology for the coming Jewish Messiah very precisely. Daniel 9, the angel says, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people. Who's Daniel's people? The Jews. And upon thy holy city. That was Jerusalem, you see. To finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, to anoint the most holy. Know therefore, the angel says to Daniel, and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem, from that start unto Messiah the Prince, shall be seven, and these are literally seven sevens, seven periods of 7 years, and 62 weeks, so 69 periods of 7 years. The street shall be built again, the wall even in troublous times. Some of them found this, shared it with others, and I believe a group of priests formed around the idea that the source of Daniel's magical powers was the true God of the Jews and of creation itself. They began to catch a glimpse of the real God. Their studies revealed that if Daniel's prophecy is real, and the 77s of Daniel 9 began with the command to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, then the time was nearly due for the promised Messiah to be born. The time is nearly here. And then they saw the supernatural star. Men have always tried to say, well, there's some sort of conglomeration of planets, or some sort of strange comet that came by. No. These men knew stars. They mapped stars and their paths. Classical authors like Herodotus, Strabo, Pliny all describe the Magi as sophisticated astronomers who studied celestial movements with remarkable precision. They knew stars, and they knew this wasn't a star. I mean, that you have to call it a star. It's a big, bright thing shining in the sky at night. But this was not a regular star. This was his star. This was the signal, you see. This God of Daniel's people in Daniel's city was real, and his Messiah, the Prince, prophesied, demanded their worship. This is true. We've been following this. The Magi have been following this for hundreds of years. Matthew 2:2. What did they say when they got there? Where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him. Not to investigate. We're convinced. We're ready to worship. Matthew 2:11. When they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary the mother. And this is the house, not the stable. And he's not a baby. He's a young child. A different concept. He's with Mary the mother. They fell down and worshipped him. When they had opened their treasures, they presented or offered. The word is offering here. They gave an offering unto him, gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. So they saw the star back home. So they formed plans to make the great pilgrimage to see the child, the fulfillment of a prophecy that they as a priesthood had followed for 483 years. Counting the days and the years. Now their group was a large one. It wasn't three men wandering through the wilderness. Consider the potential danger in carrying such an expensive gift on a trip of nearly 1,000 miles through caravan-crowded paths. A sizable gift of a pound of gold would cost $53,000 today. Most scholars estimate that frankincense in the first century cost as much as gold by weight, and ancient sources suggest myrrh was as valuable as or more valuable than frankincense. So we're talking about very expensive stuff. So perhaps they had 100,000 to 200,000 for each of these three gifts. The total would be $300,000 to $600,000 in today's money. So would you just, like, you know, put it in your backpack and walk along the campsite? These people were not going to let these caravans come and take their money. Now, the Magi, they were not soldiers. They did not study martial arts like the Shaolin temple monks. They didn't have their own karate, you know. So they would have a contingent of soldiers assigned to them. They would need then servants to erect and strike their tents each day. This whole group needed wagons of grain and herds of livestock to feed them for 4 months during their travel. Then they needed herders, butchers, bakers, and cooks to handle the food preparation. They would have had perhaps several hundred people traveling. A large caravan of this complexity, traveling with a mobile village of servants, soldiers, livestock, would likely have taken 80 to 100 days, roughly 3 to 4 months, to travel 1,000 miles, maybe longer. A large retinue is limited by its slowest elements and significant logistical daily tasks. What would be the factors? Daily setup and strike, erecting and dismantling large tents for the Magi and their retinue, plus setting up mobile kitchens for butchers and cooks, can consume 4 to 6 hours of daylight each day. Livestock constraints. Herds of animals for food, such as sheep or goats, cannot be driven at the pace of a horse. They generally move at a graze walk, limiting the caravan to roughly 10 to 12 miles per day. Then foraging and water. A large group with animals must stop frequently at specific oases or fertile areas to allow the herds to feed and drink, often requiring long rest periods or less direct routes. And then military discipline. Moving with soldiers and a baggage of train of supplies typically keeps a group to a steady, sustainable pace of 10 to 15 miles a day to avoid exhausting the animals and the staff. So estimated daily progress, probably 10 to 12 miles per day of actual travel. Rest and logistics, 1 day of rest or market activities, resupplying per week, is standard for long-distance Asian travel. So total duration, my estimation, 1,000 miles in approximately 4 months. Now this timeline aligns with historical records of similar journeys. Nehemiah made a trip from Susa to Jerusalem and covered a similar distance, took approximately 4 months. So I think we're okay here. Now, evidently, then, it took them over a year and a half after they saw the star to get ready to go. Political stuff to get done. Since the appearance of the star happened about 2 years before they arrived in Jerusalem. 4 months of that was travel. So a year and 6 months, how's that work? 6 and 8 months would be preparation. Matthew 2:7, then Herod, when he had privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. Now we don't learn there how long ago that was, but we find later, 2:16, then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceedingly wroth, sent forth, slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coast thereof, from 2 years old and under. Why 2 years? According to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. When did you see the star? That's when the child would have been born. That would have been 2 years ago. And concerning the star, they did not follow the star to Jerusalem. The star had appeared only once. They saw it. That was the sign. They said, it's true. We're going to go. They followed not the star, but Daniel's prophecies, you see. In fact, its reappearance was a great surprise and a great joy. We have it recorded in Matthew 2, 9 and 10. When they heard the king, they departed, and lo, behold, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. This is like, oh, it's there again. No, they were surprised. They were full of joy at this. The star came to stop right above the house where Jesus was living. If you go out tonight and see a star, I want you to tell me what house it's over. There's no way to do that. You know, this is like a helicopter spotlight shining down. This is not a regular star. This is an angel with a big flashlight. This is what that is. So the Magi came because they had preserved and honored Daniel's prophecies. From this, they believed in a coming divine king. They were spiritually motivated to honor a newborn ruler. They were politically powerful enough to order travel with a large entourage. Their journey was not random. It was the culmination of 600 years of Persian history, Daniel's influence, and the Magi's own priestly tradition. And I wrote it up for you so that you don't have to remember all those strange names and places and stuff. So my effort at being as accurately ordered as we can with today's understanding of archaeology. All right, this is not one that we have an invitation on, so if you see a special star, you want to go to Bethlehem or something, we don't want to do that.